Oh, thank you. The only trouble with introductions is you have to live up to them. I've already found out that there's quite a few people in this room who are at least as old as me, but that's another question. Most of this seminar will reflect on Arcade Fire's Neon Bible album, which for me is the album of the year so far, and use that as a bit of a window on the relationship between religion, popular culture, and so on. The three little introductory bits first, before we get into the meat of it, the two of which aren't about Arcade Fire. The first is, I spend a lot of my day job driving around East Kent from meeting to school to confirmation to things like that, and I've just about always got music on. One of the bizarre moments was one Sunday morning driving to a confirmation with the latest CD on and realizing that the bishop was driving to the confirmation service, singing out loud, "Working for the Church While Your Family Dies," to that nice jiggy rhythm from Intervention by Arcade Fire. And I say that because we're going to get a bit analytical, inevitably, on a seminar like this. But rock music invites an instinctive response, not an analytical one. And the analytical one, you think about it afterwards. You respond to the whole thing, not analyze a thing called a lyric to decide whether you like it or not. And I'm talking about today about an album I like a lot, but the best rock music impacts you instinctively and makes you think, rather than just as analyzed. And though I will quote some lyrics and some quotes from the writer of the lyrics, that's really shorthand about the impact of the whole thing. So first little bit of autobiographical introduction, if you like. Second one, tiny bit of theology. Ever since, as an 18-year-old, I heard a guy called Francis Schaeffer talk about culture from a Christian point of view. I've wanted to do that with popular culture. All the cultural studies I do started with me trying to think Christianly about rock music. And there's a few basic rules of thumb, it seems to me, that absolutely all things that human beings create contain a tension, contain a conflict. They are created by people who are made in God's image. Our Creator God is a master craftsperson who has created works of art that the whole of sin, evil, and the devil cannot destroy. The very worst of human beings are ruined masterpieces, not totally defaced subhuman people. Every human being shares in the fallenness of the human race, and every human being has the capacity to get things horribly wrong, horribly distorted. And therefore you can't, as when I was a youth work advisor, you know, parents and youth leaders would say, "We're so glad you're here. Give us the list of the bands our kids should listen to and the list of the bands they shouldn't listen to." And it's a complete nonsense. A, it doesn't work. You tell young people there's something they shouldn't listen to, guess what happens? B, it assumes there's the white hats and the black hats, and actually there is a mixture in it all, and you need a framework of belief, which for me is formed by my Christian faith, and therefore, whether it's by people I agree with, by people I disagree with, whatever, I'm asking for some sort of discernment, recognizing that there's going to be a mixture. Next important theological statement, I'm absolutely convinced there will be rock music in heaven. The reason for that being, there'll be a lot of other things as well. If that's a nightmare thought for you, if that sounds more like hell, there will be a lot of other stuff as well. It's okay. But the Christian hope isn't going to a disembodied heaven when we die, but the hope of a transformed heaven and earth. the whole of the universe transformed. Resurrection bodies Christians will have, for instance. And in one of the descriptions that of the holy city, in the last but one chapter of the Bible, we read that in this city, people will bring into it the glory and honor of the nations, but nothing unclean will enter in. It's as though every purified part of godly cultural creation from every culture will have its place in that extraordinary summing up, and more than we could ever have imagined. And therefore, I think the best of the rock music is going to be in there too. And therefore, I want to pay attention to stuff now, because I think I'm paying attention to some stuff that once purified might actually last for eternity and not till the latest thing next week. The last thing to say under theology is, if you're doing this discernment business, what is eternally lasting, what is not? What's the good stuff there mixed up with what bad stuff in there? You never discern on the basis of the subject matter. So a song is not bad because there's a line in it working for the church while your family dies. The subject matter is, do church people behave like the transformed human beings they're meant to be? And the question as to whether you agree with Win Butler or not with that particular lyric is, what perspective, as far as you can tell, is he bringing? And from that perspective, how do you view things? So image and fall, future heaven and earth, discernments, not on subject matter, but on the perspective on the subject matter. Last little intro. Rock and religion has a long, long history. Most of the forms of rock music that are still around, even all the sort of hybrid forms and so on, have roots in the music of black slaves coming to Christ and writing spirituals centuries ago. We just celebrated Elvis's death, haven't we? Yes, interesting. Someone who sang with a country music accompaniment to begin with, to rhythm and blues rhythms with the voice of a black gospel singer. It all got fused in there. Broadly, these categories appear, it seems to me, in pop history. There's a whole load of those who've come from what we would now call black majority churches in the States and here. Some staying holy, some not. Sam Cooke, Aretha Franklin, Marvin Gaye, Prince, Al Green, now the Reverend Al Green. Prince is now a Jehovah's Witness. Mary J. Blige, Beverly Knight, who's a Wolverhampton Pentecostal and upbringing, Beyonce and so on. Throw in some confused rappers like P. Diddy and Kanye West, and there's a whole religious background to a great swathe of music. You've then got the lapsed Roman Catholics. Let's just mention Madonna, Sting, Springsteen, and the Pet Shop Boys for now, because this isn't my history of rock and spirituality talk. You've got the Celts, U2 and some of the Runrig guys and people like that being into some mainstream Christianity, Mike Scott, Waterboys, Enya and so on being more into the New Agey stuff. There's always been dogmatic opponents of religion. The song that people vote for often as the greatest rock song of all time, John Lennon's Imagine, could be the theme tune to a certain Richard Dawkins book recently. And then, really, ever since U2, leaving Cliff Richard out of the story, there's been mainstream Christians. I mean, the American band The Fray are quite straightforward, that they grew up as, Protestant Christians, church-going, and they still are, and why shouldn't they be? Just because they're rock and roll musicians, and completely deny the sort of myths that you can't be. Athlete formed in Ichthus's non-alcoholic bar in South London. Both Beddingfields were part of a Christian electronic band connected to Hillsong's London. Corinne Bailey-Ray went to revive the church in... in Leeds and first learned to sing in a Brethren Assembly and then switched to a Baptist church because there was a choir and she could have instruments and U2 and so on. Now, there's all these sort of broad categories. Guys out the black church, lapsed Catholics, Celts, ideological opponents of religion, mainstream Christians, let alone an assortment of Muslims, Buddhists, Rastas, of course, and so on. It seems to me that to switch to Arcade Fire now. Arcade Fire don't fit any of those categories. They do fit, I think, and are by far the most, I think, serious contributors to maybe a new category. And that's people who either have religious faith or have a religious background or have a significant knowledge of religion and a substantial respect for it, who spot the connection between religious faith and a moral life, and who therefore see faith as the basis of morality, and who look at the society we're in and worry about it. And if they criticize the church, they criticize the church for not providing a society with, if you like, the framework, an alternative way of life that they think it should. I'm now convinced that's exactly what's going on with Arcade Fire and Win Butler, and particularly the Neon Bible album. But it's true in recent interviews with Jack White of the White Stripes, and of course Brandon Flowers of the Killers is still a practicing Mormon, and both of those in recent interviews have very straightforwardly connected faith to a moral way of life and compared that moral way of life favorably with an awful lot of popular culture in the West. So it seems there's something new happening. I mean, Arcade Fire, as far as I know, are not any sort of practicing Christian. We'll do something about the background. But there is this particular group, I think, coming through that's using religion as part of a critique of society. And if it critiques religion, it's because it's not doing its part, rather than because it's a good religion or it's got stereotypes. Now, wasn't a hesitation, and he says, I think the world is effing dark. And there's enough people saying everything's going to be okay. You know, it's great to hear that, but it's not true. It's not going to work itself out. And then just because they think he's being desperately, desperately serious, he'd just gone to a mindless movie and said, I like total no-brain crap too, but it's not our calling. So here's a significant critique that's going to fall down in a minute. Here's a band with a view on society. I suspect that they're able to have, because they're from Canada, not the States, and they're one of their key creative people has moved and has now lived for 5 or 6 years in Canada and now has a different perspective, but he was questioning his culture when he was in the States. The thing that Win Butler really critiques is the empty-mindedness of a very large amount of consumerism. Now, I want to identify with that. It seems to me that the critical issue about Christian faith in mission and so on isn't, though I have a great deal to do with it, fresh expressions of church, though I believe they're vital. It's what sort of disciples will Christians be, and what sort of disciples will be made in fresh expressions of church and all sorts of church, and that the critical issue about discipleship is the issue of being disciples in a consumer culture. So I identify 100% with the stuff that Win Butler's saying about the corrosive nature of consumerism. And it's worth knowing how crucial track on Neon Bible is called Windowsill. And it's a major part of their life set, certainly too, as far as the one I watched from Glastonbury. And they were doing their first major tour of the States. They'd sold 350,000 copies of the first album. They were in over their head. They didn't have a manager. The drummer was trying to be the road manager, but left town without actually banking the money. And so Wynn and Regine find themselves sitting up all night counting $50,000 in a paper bag before banking it. And just something about the whole consumer culture got there, and he began to write again, and he wrote Windowsill. Don't want to hear the noises on TV. Don't want the salesman coming after me. Don't want to live in my father's house no more. I don't want it faster. I don't want it free. I don't want to show you what they've done to me. Don't want to live in my father's house no more. Don't want to choose black or blue. Don't want to see what they've done to you. And the chorus goes, the tide is high and it's rising still. Don't want to give them my name and address. Don't want to see what happens next. Don't want to live with my father's debts. You can't forgive what you can't forget. Don't want to fight in a holy war. Iraq is another of the issues. Don't want the salesman knocking at my door. And this guy who went to one of the poshest schools in America, raised in Texas, sings, I don't want to live in America no more. And bizarrely, everywhere they tour in the States, this enormous cheer goes up when he sings it. But on it goes, MTV, what have you done to me? Save my soul, set me free. What have you done to me? I can't breathe, I can't see, World War III, etc., etc. And that actually was written as a result of that night counting money. He has a sense of irony. But the sense that something is profoundly wrong with the consumer culture got him as a teenager. He starts remembering having to buy Nike or his life would be made a living hell at his extremely expensive school. That he had shoes called Turntex, which was Walmart's own brand, and was literally mocked by other kids at school. He remembers thinking in fifth or sixth grade that it was going to consume half his life. And he remembers as a 10-year-old crying at Christmas because he didn't get the right brand of jeans. And he remembers even as a 10-year-old thinking, that is weird. There's something funny about that. One of their multi-instrumentalists, Tim Kingsbury, was taunted at school because he didn't have an Ocean Pacific shirt. So at last, to get the kid off the hook, Mum bought an Ocean Pacific shirt. He was so proud, went to school, and the kid in school walked over, pulled the tag, and said, it's a fake, and laughed at him anyway. And one questioner says, well, it's 10 times as intense now for teenagers. And he says, yeah, it's taken on this Christina Aguilera porn edge, super sexualized. It's pretty extreme, and I don't envy teenagers at the moment. And he talks quite a lot about the way we absorb stuff through continual electronic media without apparently exercising our critical faculties. And This is not a mocking Christianity album. Neon Bible lyrics, a vial of hope, a vial of pain. In the light, they both look the same. Pour them out into the world and every boy and girl. It's the neon Bible, not much chance for survival if the neon Bible is right. Take the poison of your age. Don't lick your fingers when you turn the page. But I know is what I know is what you know is right. In the city, it's the only light. It's the neon Bible. Not much chance of survival. And then, oh God, well, look at you now. You lost it, but you don't know how. In the light of a golden calf, God, I had to laugh. Poison of the age. The expression neon Bible is not about the Bible. It's about the Bible of our age, the electronic culture, and saying there's not much hope if it's true. Now, it's in that context, a profound distancing from a lot of culture, a sense of ambiguity of actually being part of it as well, because that, you know, they're making their living selling records in the consumer market. And then it's that terrific sense that something has got to change, that the thing is dark, it doesn't give light. That's where the critique of religion comes in. The critique of religion is not the critique of religion per se, of Christianity per se, of church per se. It's Christianity is meant to offer a counter, an alternative to this, and in quite a lot of places, it's not doing it. That's where intervention comes from. I haven't been able to discover any personal background in working for the church while your family dies. It's just a really striking lyric that's drawing out that contrast. But I've come to think that the family is not the personal family. The more I think about this album, the more I think the family is the family of your fellow human beings in this culture. And this culture is killing you, and you're working for the church and not noticing what's going on in the culture. It talks about I can taste the fear and so on. Singing hallelujah with the fear in your heart, every spark of friendship will die without a home, etc. Now, I hope you've gathered already from several of the quotes that Win Butler, co-songwriter and main lyric writer, sort of leader of a very democratic band, is highly literate when it comes to religion. And he's highly literate when it comes to religion, A, because his background is Mormon, and B, because when he got to Montreal, he actually did a course on theology or interpretation. He says, I'm not really a churchgoer these days. I grew up in a somewhat religious family. My dad's family isn't religious at all, but my mum's side of the family is. So as a child, I was exposed to church a bit. And he also talks about driving past mega churches and knowing that things like that can become enormous commercial industries in their own, in the States. I'm a spiritual person. I'm not interested in going to church because that's not where I'm at. But religion has been asking some pretty heavy questions for a long time. And for me, it's always about the question more than the answers. Let's just pause on that one. I've read a lot of things from Win Butler that I appreciate and respect. I do think that it's all about the questions, not about the answers things, is a cop-out. I do think it's actually trite. Yes, we should not close down and be closed to new truth, but actually the only way character grows is being embedded in your Christian faith, and going deeper and deeper and deeper, and not surrounding all of your life with, I don't know about this, I don't know about that, I don't know about the other. We will only live an alternative way of life in the consumer culture if we have character that grows to make us people who consistently act in a different way. And you can't do that. You can't do that on a diet of questions. You have to embody yourself deep into a tradition and its practices and so on. And then the Holy Spirit can shape some character in you. So, not so keen on that, but listen to this. I don't have an overly negative view of religion. It's so diverse. And when people think they're just going on about religion, he gets a little bit shirty and says, well, of course, we do practice blood sacrifice up at the studio, but it's a purely secular thing. Now, I think when he did his religious studies course, and I haven't followed up whether he did the whole degree through or whether he just enlisted for a while and did some of it, he was also desperately trying to form a band. So it's quite clear that forming a band was number one agenda, being a student was number two agenda. But it's put a substantial feel for the Bible into his lyric writing. And in a magazine called Interview Magazine, a fellow singer, Ryan Adams, interviews him and is trying to say more negative stuff about the Bible than Butler is willing to say. Ryan Adams, the Bible's application may have been more relevant at the time at which it was written, the Old Testament relevant to its time. Answer from Win Butler. The Bible's still relevant, or so many people wouldn't still believe in it. I think that's a pretty unique thing about it. but at the same time, expecting somehow to relate it to the culture in which we live now does some pretty weird does something pretty weird to the meaning of the text. Ryan Adams, do you think we're in a time when the Bible itself has been appropriate to sell a kind of mysticism in our culture, when our culture is becoming less and less mystic? Now listen to this. I'm just always suspicious when religion isn't counter-cultural. It seems the purpose of the Bible was to be counter-cultural, even at the time it was written. And Adam says, and you went to school to study Bible interpretation, right? Yes, it was scriptural interpretation. A lot of stuff about how over the time people have got different meanings out of the text. So here's someone who respects scripture, who also knows that interpreting it is complex, who thinks the Bible is still relevant, and who draws on its themes. He says once, there's two kinds of fear. The Bible talks a lot about fear of God, fear in the face of something awesome. That kind of fear is the type of fear that makes someone want to change. But a fear of other people makes you want to stay the same, to protect what you have. It's a stagnant fear, and it's paralyzing. And I think the song, Keep the Car Running, every night my dream's the same, same old city with a different name. Men are coming to take me away, I don't know why, but I know I can't stay, and so on and so on. But keep the car. There's a fear I keep so deep, and knew its name since I could speak. Keep the car running. That, I think, is about that bit in our society that runs for relationships, that hypes up fear. I mean, it's a bad time to say it when we've had this whole string of appalling murders of teenagers by teenagers and so on. But actually, largely, our streets in this country are the safest they've ever been. And yet the fear of letting a child out, we have enormous fears about things that are immensely serious if they happen. But the chance of them happening is tiny. And we are fearful, and therefore I think hopeless, because hopeless culture. Black Mirror, absolutely. But note, Butler's saying there's a type of fear that makes you change. It's the fear of something awesome, the fear of God. And he'd like more of that in the culture. He says this, the conflict between spirituality and consumerism is one of the major themes running through the Neon Bible. Central to the album, he says, is this idea that Christianity and consumerism are completely compatible is the greatest insanity of our times. Christianity, religion, is always meant to be countercultural. There is a conflict between spirituality and consumerism. I believe that's true. I believe the impact of consumerism on our culture does one of two things to spirituality. It either means that you think you don't need it because you're content with the buzz you're getting, or it turns spirituality into a consumer item to give you a buzz. So the majority of people are less and less spiritual, a significant section of people. And we've demonstrated this in a book called about Generation Y, certainly 15 to 25-year-olds. Most of them, no desire for transcendence whatsoever because life is cool. And the purpose of life is to be happy. And everything you need to be happy is there. And, well, if you don't end up happy, that's, well, shit happens. It doesn't work for everyone. But basically, for most people, that's fine. And no hint whatsoever that if life turned to tragedy, there would be a review of that worldview. Just simply the assumption that it was tough for me. And he's talking about that. There is a large, but still definitely a minority, looking for spirituality. But most spirituality comes packaged these days. It's another consumer item to give you a buzz. Now, the spiritual in the everyday is the major theme of Greenbelt this year, and I'm certainly on a panel about it on Monday. But the critique is right. There's a conflict between spirituality and consumerism. And if Christianity is treated as completely compatible with consumerism, that's called syncretism. That means the major elements of the culture have taken the distinctive things out of Christianity, and we now have a Christianity that's just another branch of consumerism. And of course, we have some of that. There is, frankly, far more of that in North America than in UK and mainland Europe, but there's plenty of it around here. And I believe Butler is in that sense being prophetic. He is presenting the church on the basis of its own scriptures with a challenge to live counterculturally out of a significant study of religion. He says, I think there's some pretty amazing language in the Bible. The thing I've always been interested about religion is that compared to more modern spirituality, the religions have been looking at these philosophical questions, really hard questions, for a long time. There's a lot of stuff that philosophy doesn't talk about. In the secular world, people don't talk about those ideas, but they've really interested me. Well, what sort of things? Well, the idea of evil and death and love. There's not a scientific way to talk about it. Whenever you are talking about meaning, I think a lot of the human experience has to do with trying to understand what things mean. And there's not really any tools to do that unless you're thinking about it in a more spiritual or philosophical realm. One of the things we found when we did the Generation Y research was that loads of young people as consumers were totally content in a sort of middle-sized worldview. Life seemed to be okay without asking any questions about the meaning of life. We called it the happy midi narrative, because the purpose of life is to be happy. Midi, mid-size, rather than meta, all of life. I'm content where I am. And Wynn Butler is a rock musician who's not content about that. And he knows enough about faith from his upbringing. He knows enough about faith from his college studies to say there is a whole rich resource here addressing the questions that our culture most needs, but we're not doing it. And he says it's easy for 90% of your brain to be filled up with things that absolutely have no meaning. And he actually knows. I mean, there's a song on the album called Antichrist Television Blues, written sort of Bruce Springsteen style, he will admit. And it's about a middle-aged dad who wants his little girl to grow up to be a TV star so that she can show people what God and life are meant to be like. And part of it's horrible because it's all about manipulation. It's almost certainly based around a family called Simpson. No, not that one in the cartoon. In American celebrity culture, dear God, would you send me a child? Oh God, will you send me a child? I want to put it up on the TV screen so the world can see what your true word means. Lord, would you just send me a sign? And so on. But near the end of the song, the father starts to have a conscience. Here's this apparently good way of using consumerism to promote faith. Here's a consumer sort of religion being plugged on the telly through his daughter. The last two lines there are, I'm through being cute, I'm through being nice. Oh, tell me, Lord, am I the Antichrist? Have I actually missed the whole thing in what I'm trying to do? And Wynn Butler says the song is trying to understand something about modern culture. There is this cultural distortion of feedback loop that happens when artists try and make themselves into a mirror in which their fans can see themselves. The sad thing is that behind all these female teen stars, no matter how freely they like to think they're expressing themselves, are perverted middle-aged men controlling them. I just wanted to pull back the curtain and put one of them on a stage for a change. But what interests me is in doing that, he actually does it with some sympathy for the dilemma of the dad. Do you see, this stuff isn't black and white. It's a thoughtful man wanting to say some strong things, but always to see some of the complexities, some of the difficulties, the moral dilemmas that are of being a Christian in a consumer society. One of the things, there's a number of writers who clearly think that, you know, Wynn Butler and Arcade Fire are strong critics of institutionalized religion. And that is total nonsense. They're not. They're strong critics of religion that has compromised with consumerism and failed to be countercultural. And they are strong critics of faith, of a faith community that has rich resources that answers that address questions the society most needs to address, and somehow fail to connect. And I become more and more sure that you're working for the church while at least the Western human family dies spiritually, is what it's saying. Now, the artists, the writers who think they're anti-religion, full stop, find it ironic that the celebrated nature of their shows evokes, I quote, nothing so much as an underground rock version of an old-time gospel tent revival meeting. Maybe that's exactly the point. Just a tiny bit more. The Iraq looms across this album. They were touring and writing, you know, as the Iraq thing began to get more and more serious in the States. Mirror, mirror on the wall, show me where those bombs will fall. And a song about the one song about not wanting to be in World War III. And there's not a lot more lyrically about it, but one of the great discontents from one point of view is the consumerism, and the other thing is the involvement in Iraq. The thing that's a little depressing is that in my generation, he says, there's a feeling that if you do a song about war, there's this, oh, I've already heard that, we know the war's bad, whatever. But I think, he says, this must be the most prime time for protest in the history of civilization. Well, Purple Passage, over the top, rock music speak, maybe, but interesting. The most prime time for protest in the history of civilization. People say, we've already talked about it, war, Iraq, Bush. No, we haven't, not nearly enough. We have to jump in there and make an impression. And I am a bishop, but I'm quoting next, okay? This shit is still happening in our name. And it's getting worse by the day. You don't have to have an entire plan of how to withdraw from Iraq in order to say something about it. I'm not an effing political planner. I don't know how to bail Bush out of this shit. But it doesn't make it any less evil. It's as though if you're confused, you're not meant to say anything, but you should. If you feel something is wrong, you shouldn't be silent. Countercultural again. Then he goes back to another spiritual source. When you read Martin Luther King's speeches about Vietnam, it could be today. Just change the name of the country and you're talking about exactly the same situation. We're basically causing spiritual death in our country by doing what we're doing. At certain points, you become morally unable to do good in the world because the country gets so cynical and depressed. There isn't the force of will to try and change things. I definitely feel that in my generation, this kind of fatigue, and I feel that myself. You've got to fight it. Now, let's just pause for a minute. I think this guy and some others are beginning to evoke a new generational thing. My prayer, I think, long term for Arcade Fire is that the sort of stance they're taking will more and more percolate a generation. Their feeling is that the generation since Generation X, you know, the Kurt Cobain let's take it back even further. Let's go back to my generation, okay? I was on the Isle of Wight watching Hendrix's last gig, Okay, so I'm out the hippie generation. I got ordained with hair halfway down my back in blue suede boots. You know, very sad, really, as a typical Christian, at least 3 years behind the times. But, but our generation, my generation, went through the peace and love and make the world different thing and then turned into the most selfish generation of adults there's been for a long time. We're also the generation that through free love, divorce, abortion and stuff like that produced a much smaller generation after us experiencing a higher proportion of divorce, and you got the whole Gen Y thing and the angst and anger and this was meant to be better and it's not was phenomenally expressed through people like Kurt Cobain and Nirvana. And I remember having to do a seminar at Greenbelt years ago, main stage, about the death of Kurt Cobain because of the literally hundreds of teenagers who were distraught about it because somehow they related to this guy. Now, all that died down again. And we seem to have regrown a multi-generational gathering of content consumers who don't know they're spiritually dying, whose horizons as to what life is meant to be and what life means are horrendously narrow, who seem to be able to be touched occasionally about the world's poor by a big TV event, but only if it's media. And I think Butler is right saying it just can't carry on like that. If something doesn't explode even further between the Muslim world and the West, it will in terms of migration on the basis of poverty or something. It just can't. We cannot get more and more electronically content and affluent while more and more of the world starves. And it's as though there's a few rock musicians, and I'm sure there's a few movie makers and other artists and so on, who are beginning to say, wake up. And that they actually recognize the very power of consumerist media at deadening them. And even if they don't know what you're doing, they're saying you've got to do something. And most of the ones I've read recently are drawing on a historic understanding of Christianity or sometimes another faith to say, we've got to pull these resources back in. And their critique of the church is when the church doesn't do it. They're not against religion per se. And it seems to me that just as there's always been in the best of truthful rock music from the blues on, the stuff that says it's really dark is actually seeing it in a way that gives hope. I don't think Neon Bible is about the world being black. It is not about the world being hopeless. The very fact that the things are being said is a sign of hope. The band have a tremendous sense of the importance of community, for instance, in an individualistic age. Now, that's partly because of the seven main members, you know, two are brothers and one of the brothers is married to another member and so on. But what's the key word in the title of four of the songs on Funeral? Neighborhood. It's about community. The band functions significantly as a community. Wynn says, boarding school, the army or church are the only places where people are forced to be a community with people they wouldn't choose to be with. I think it's valuable to be in a community with people you have nothing in common with. Cross-cultural, cross-boundary community. Bridging social capital, if you know that terminology. He had it in his posh school. He's got it in a band with two Americans and five Canadians, one of whom's really from Haiti. And the interaction shows. Again, one of the writers says, on stage, the relationships lead to interactions so spirited that shows sometimes resemble a Baptist church service more than a concert. Where the Baptists sneaked in on this, I don't know, but we'll deal with that. And the religious connotations and the band's music and presentation aren't accidental. Will Butler, the prankster, the younger Butler of the lyric writer. A good percentage of rock bands when they perform, it's a totally sexual thing. I don't think that we're that sexual. At least that's not what we're acting about. On a good night, it's more like the ecstasy of St. Teresa. Now, I think St. Teresa might have a few questions about that. But will you note the contrast being made between a band that communicates sexual tension and excitement and a band that actually is trying to communicate relationship and some sort of a small s spiritual experience? I think the song No Cars Go is actually a song about hope. We know a place where no planes go. We know a place where no ships go. Hey, no cars go. No cars go where we know. We know a place where no spaceships go. We know a place where no subs go. Hey, no cars go where we know. Hey, US kids now, how? Hey, no cars go. Between the click of the light and the start of the dream. Little babies, let's go. Women and children, let's go. Old folks, let's go. And they often put in, don't know where we're going. They, like many writers, have a much clearer sense of what's wrong than how you put it right, where the journey will take. But they are profoundly aware that there are resources in, and it's primarily the Christian faith, he's read other faith texts as well, and in the history of theology, that are just what a Black Mirror consumer society needs. I think it's a splendid album. I have tried to interpret it to you in the light of what the main writers themselves say they are addressing. All interpretation is personal. I might have got it wrong, but I think in a Black Mirror world, Arcade Fire are a sign of hope. Their critique of religion and consumerism needs to be listened to. It is the critical issue about the effectiveness of many people like you and me in our culture as beware witness to faith and the true meaning of humanity. And just one other thing to say to you. Sarah Mason's husband, David Dark, isn't here. Sarah is here at Greenbelt. He's written a very good piece about Arcade Fire. You'll find online, if you just Google David Dark, D-A-R-K, and Arcade Fire, or go via the Christianity Today website, you'll find an excellent piece that I'd really like to commend to you. Guys, thank you for listening patiently, including when I had to shout. I'm afraid in 17 minutes I have to be a panel at the other end of the site. So I'm not going to be able to answer lots of questions personally now, but I am here till sometime Monday, and you can novel me if you want to. Thank you very much for coming.